Today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 10. Chapter 10 is entitled Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Today we are reading text 20. Anyonyam ashitam jalpa.
Anyonyam ashitam jalpa.
Anyonyam ashitam jalpa.
Anyonyam ashitam jalpa.
Uttama shloka chetasham.
Uttama shloka chetasham.
Uttama shloka chetasam.
Uttama shloka chetasam.
Kauravendra pura srinam.
Kauravendra pura srinam.
Kauravendra pura srinam.
Kauravendra pura srinam.
Sarvashruti manoharaha.
Sarvashruti manoharaha.
Sarvashruti manoharaha.
Sarvashruti manoharaha. Asit, there was Sanjalpa, talking, Uttama Shloka, the Supreme who is praised by selected poetry, Chetasam, of those whose hearts are absorbed in that way, Kaurava Indra,
the king of the Kurus, Pura, capital. Prinam. All the ladies. Sarva. All. Shruti. The Vedas. Manahara. Attractive to the mind. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Absorbed in the thought of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is sung in select poetry, the ladies on the roofs of all the houses of Hastinapur began to talk of him. This talk was more attractive than the hymns of the Vedas. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that in all the Vedic literatures, the goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Factually, the glories of the Lord are depicted in such literature as the Vedas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. And in the Bhagavatam, they are specifically mentioned in respect to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, while the ladies on the tops of the houses in the capital of the kings of the Kuru dynasty were talking about the Lord, their talk was more pleasing than the Vedic hymns. Anything sung in the praise of the Lord is Shruti Mantra. There are songs of Thakur Narottam Das, one of the Acharyas in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, composed in simple Bengali language. But Thakur Vishwanath Chakravarti, another very learned Acharya of the same Sampradaya, has approved the songs by Thakur Narottam Das to be as good as Vedic mantras. And this is so because of the subject matter. The language is immaterial, but the subject matter is important. The ladies who were all absorbed in the thought and actions of the Lord developed the consciousness of Vedic wisdom by the grace of the Lord. And therefore, although such ladies might not have been very learned scholars in Sanskrit or otherwise, still whatever they spoke was more attractive than the Vedic hymns. The Vedic hymns in the Upanishads are sometimes indirectly directed to the Supreme Lord. But the talks of the ladies were directly spoken of the Lord, and thus they were more pleasing to the heart. The ladies' talks appeared to be more valuable than the learned Brahmanas' benedictions.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pamrum Langayate Nirim Yat Pripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. The blessings of the senior devotees who would like to start the class. So we are seeing here that Lord Krishna is departing for Dwarka. He has been in Hastinapur for a long time with the Kauravas. He was there when the war had happened. He was by the side of the Kauravas, by the side of the Pandavas. And now he is leaving Hastinapur finally. He tried to leave in between also, but Kunti Maharani's prayers and Yudhishthir Maharaj's request again made him stay back. The love of his devotees made him stay back in Hastinapur a few more months. And now he is finally leaving for Dwarka, to go back to his own capital city. And we see in these series of verses, which have been going on since the past few classes, that it has been vividly described how a grand send-off is being given to Lord Krishna. And, these etiquettes are being followed so elaborately. Bhagavatam is teaching us that these etiquettes have to be followed very elaborately. When somebody senior, this is the Supreme Lord, but even if somebody senior leaves, you should not just forego the etiquette of giving them a grand send-off. And we are seeing that is happening over here. Just in the previous year's verse, it was mentioned that Uddhava and Satyaki were fanning the Lord. And before that, it was mentioned Arjuna was holding a bejeweled umbrella on top of the Lord. And everybody has gathered over there to give a send-off to the Lord. So, in Vedic life, we see that these etiquettes were never rejected. They were not given up, thinking that, these are just mere formalities. Why bother to finish all these formalities? That was not given up as thinking as these are unnecessary formalities. If you see, even marriages in Vedic times, they were so elaborate. It used to be such an elaborate affair. There used to be 7-day celebration whenever a marriage was taking place in a house. Apart from the main day, before 3 days and after 3 days, they used to have so many other ceremonies and rituals taking place. But if we look at the modern world, nowadays marriages are just being, there is no marriages only happening. There are so much live-in relationships going on. But even if marriages are happening, people are saying, even in India this culture has started, that, why have such a big formality? We will just go to the office and register our marriage and that is enough. That is what people have started saying that. And they often don't understand that why all these ceremonies were there, why all these rituals were there, why all these big celebrations were there when a marriage was taking place. Usually people don't understand what is the purpose behind all these Vedic things which have been said, that marriages should be performed nicely in front of the fire and all. So people reject it because they don't know the purpose. And Vedas will never tell anything to be done if there is no purpose behind that ceremony or there is no purpose behind the activity. So we see in marriages usually, the husband and wife take oaths or they take vows. The sacred vows are taken in the presence of fire, in the presence of all the demigods, in the presence of the Supreme Lord, and in the brahmanas, the sages, they are all witness, and even the whole society, because it's a grand affair, so many relatives, so many friends, everybody comes to take part in the marriage happening in a family. So in front of everybody, the husband and wife are taking this oath of marriage. And therefore, they realize that it is a serious affair. It's not an affair which has to be taken lightly, or it's not just a formality that is going on over here. And because they have taken these vows in front of so many people, so whenever then later on there's a quarrel, or there is some argument between them, they will not take it lightly. because it was so much imposed on them during the wedding ceremony that it is a serious thing and so much money was spent to celebrate that wedding. So they will not take it lightly and they will not just separate ways or you go my way, I go my way. No, they will not do that. Because they know that so many witnesses were there, they themselves will take their marriage vows seriously. And they will not just give it up or give up, throw away their marriage that, oh, it was just a formality and anyway it's over now. They will not do that. So that is the purpose why all these Vedic ceremonies are celebrated so grandly. So that the husband and wife, especially in case of marriage, so that the husband and wife learn to take the nature of the seriousness of the marriage and don't take it lightly and just reject it. So that is one of the purposes of having this grand celebration or this Vedic etiquette of following marriages like this. And we see nowadays people are just brushing it off. In fact, in US there were statistics which showed that the divorce rate, I'm sure in Australia also it must be the same, that the divorce rate was 70% some years ago. 70% of the marriages were failing. But now over the last few years it has declined and it has come down to around 50% or so, the divorce rate. And is this because people have started becoming more religious or people have started taking their marriage vow seriously? No, that's not the reason. It's because marriages are not happening nowadays and therefore the divorce rate is not there. Most of the people have, you know, now the whole, initially, you know, that phase had come that people reject the ceremony, but at least they will go to an office and register their marriage. But now even that has been taken away. That also has been given up by the society. So we see how Kali Yuga is degrading. Vedic times grand ceremonies, then slowly people just started giving up those ceremonies and go to the registered office or call a few friends, exchange rings, say the vows and that's it. The marriage is over. You have a certificate in your hand to show that we are married. And now even that is being rejected. People are not even bothering to do that. People are saying, why marry? Why have this external formality? When there is love in the heart, we know each other well and we love each other well in the heart. Then why go to these offices and register a marriage, or why go to a church, or why have a ceremony about celebrating this marriage? We know each other, we love each other, so we'll just start staying together. So there are these live-in relationships which have started now in the society, and therefore the divorce rate has dropped because there was no marriage in the first place. And Srila, you know, in similar lines, once a disciple went to Srila Prabhupada and he asked Prabhupada, he said, what is the need of accepting a guru externally? Why have this diksha ceremony and accept a guru in front of the fire? Why can't I just accept a guru in my heart? So Srila Prabhupada was very savvy. He was very smart in these matters. He immediately understood what was the motive of this person behind, you know, what was his motive behind asking such a question. The motive was that this person, such people who just want to accept in the heart or who will just, you know, accept from a photo or something like that, their motive is that if they have a guru whom they have accepted or from whom they have taken the Diksha Mantra in front of fire, they have taken vows in front of the whole society of Vaishnavas, then they will have to obey the instructions of that guru. And that is where their ego comes in between, that why I should obey anybody's instructions. I'm good as it is. I don't need anybody to tell me what to do in my life. So that was the purpose which Srila Prabhupada saw behind this question. So Srila Prabhupada immediately asked him. He said that why, when you're hungry, why do you have a plate of prasadam in front of you? Why not just eat in your heart? No need of having a physical plate of prasadam in front of you. Why do that formality? Just have the prasadam in your heart. So Srila Prabhupada was cutting through this ignorance which the disciple was trying to pose. That no, you know, even taking diksha or accepting a guru is not a mere formality. It has to be done. The proper etiquette has to be followed. There has to be a Vedic ceremony. There has to be a yajna. There have to be sacred vows. There have to be the deities, brahmanas, everybody present. So we see that there is some purpose behind these etiquette. Otherwise the Srimad Bhagavatam wouldn't describe so much. In the previous verses, like they are describing what is Arjuna holding, what is Satyaki and Uddhava holding, they wouldn't go into so much detail of how, you know, such a grand send-off was being given to Lord Krishna. So whatever is there in the Vedas always has a purpose behind it. And the purpose is that by following all these external etiquettes and rituals or these external ceremonies, you are actually making progress internally in your Krishna consciousness. So whenever in the past also it was observed, especially in you know, in India where there was some semblance of Vedic culture prevailing, that whenever a guest used to leave the house, then there was a big send-off even given to that guest. The whole family will gather, they will have a tray full of gifts to give the guests, either a shawl or some dry fruits, some fruits. There will be a garland to give the, or a bouquet of flowers or something like that. And they will all pay obeisances. They will give some cash also on top of that. So there used to be a grand send-off which was being given to these guests when they used to leave somebody's house. Or even in our society, if we see, whenever a sannyasi leaves or whenever a senior disciple of Prabhupada or any senior devotee is leaving, then usually all his disciples will gather and they will give him a send-off. They will do like a small kirtan when the sannyasi or the devotee is getting into the car. And they will have all the other Vaishnavas also present there to witness how they are giving the send-off. So all these formalities or all these etiquettes, if they are rejected, thinking that this is all unnecessary and why waste time doing all this, I would rather go and chant or I would rather go and do some practical devotional service, then the repercussion is that people will stop following any etiquette or any formalities in society. Slowly it will start degrading. All these things will be given up so easily. So if the seniors do all these things, like we see, you know, Yudhishthir Maharaj is himself the king now and the Pandavas are all the kings, but they have themselves come to send off Krishna. So if the seniors do and the seniors follow all these etiquettes, then they are setting a very good example for the juniors. And that it invokes love and faith in the heart of the juniors that no, I should also do these things. This is the way Vaishnava should be respected. This is the way a send-off should be given when some senior devotee is leaving. So they will also not take all these things lightly. That it will evoke faith and love in their heart and respect for seniority in their heart. And in this way, unknowingly or subtly, they are making progress in their Krishna consciousness. So whatever is given in the Shastras or whatever has been given in the Vedas is never false or is never to be rejected as just being unnecessary. All those things should be followed by everybody who are specially following the Vedas. Because this is how the Shastras or the Bhagavatam is teaching us how to internally make progress in our Krishna consciousness. So we see here that Krishna is leaving for Dwarka and everybody has gathered. So everyone has left their work. The first priority for them right now is to go and see Lord Krishna and to give him a send-off, to give him a grand farewell when he is leaving Hastinapur and going. So they are not, you know, oh okay, we'll say just bye and we'll come back so that we can go on with our daily normal activities. That is not the mood that is being shown over here in the Bhagavatam. Everybody has left everything that they were doing and they are all present there. And according to their positions in the society or in the Varnashrama Dharma, they are offering their respects to Krishna. So Yudhishthir Maharaj, he is elder to Krishna. So Krishna is paying obeisances to him and he is accepting the obeisances from Krishna. Arjuna was his equal and friend, so he embraced Lord Krishna. And Nakula and Sahadeva paid obeisances to Krishna. So everybody is following different etiquette of sending Krishna off according to their position. Nobody is doing according to their own whims and fancies that, oh, I can just give Krishna farewell however I want. Everybody is present. Now in the modern times, for example, if we see this culture is slowly degrading. So if someone is leaving, what would people do in modern times? They will just come and do handshake. Oh, okay, thank you for visiting. I'll see you again. And maybe in the Western countries, they might just give each other a kiss on the cheek. And they will just send people off like that and say bye and then go away. So that is how, you know, modern culture is. But in the Vedic system, all this was being followed very nicely. So nobody is doing according to their whims and fancies. Everybody is following the etiquette based on their position in the society. And similarly, we see over here that how the ladies are saying farewell to Lord Krishna. Now the ladies have gone on the rooftops to say farewell. So sometimes we see, you know, when a Maharaj is visiting and somebody who is quite new or who is not knowing much etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, they will run to the sannyasi saying, Maharaj, Maharaj, and they will go so close to the sannyasi. Some ladies do like that. And the sannyasi actually gets scared and, you know, they back off. Okay, okay, what do you want? But many times we see, you know, some of the ladies don't realize that the etiquette is I have to maintain a distance. If he's a sannyasi, I should not go very close. But no, here it's not being followed like that. There is no whims and fancies. Everybody knows, the ladies knew what the Shastras have laid down for ladies in society and they are following that etiquette. They have gone to the rooftop to give their farewell to Lord Krishna. And it's not the reverse. So in the Shastras it is said that usually, you know, women's position is very clearly explained in the Shastras. And it says that women are usually subordinate to the men.
But we see over here that although Shastras themselves claim that women are subordinate to the men, but the reverse has not been given, that men go on the rooftop and women give farewell from the down. So, men are superior, so they be on the rooftop. That has not been given. That etiquette has not been given. And why that has not been given? Because if men go on top, especially in modern times, and we see this happening a lot during the Holi festival in India. I don't know if any of you all have been during Holi festival in India, but especially from a big city from where I come, you know, all the boys will be on the rooftops throwing water balloons at the girls down. And this is how, you know, if the girls are down and the boys are on top, this is what will be followed. They will just look out for beautiful girls and they will try to throw water balloons at them and try to sort of, you know, exploit the girls in this way. So the Vedic system was reversed. The men are at the bottom and the ladies are on the top. So Prabhupada says that, you know, sometimes women keep arguing that, oh, why should we follow all these systems which have been given in the Vedas? You know, usually nowadays, women will always talk of women's liberation and equality of women with men. So, you know, they would have argued if they read such things that, oh, why should we go on top? Why should there be a separation? In the verse number 16, I think in the previous 2-3 verses, Prabhupada explains in the purport that, you know, always ladies and men were kept separate from each other in the Vedic times. And that was not, we see Mohammedans, like Muslims, they have that parda system where the ladies have a veil or a scarf or something like that and they are kept separate from the men. But Prabhupada says that it is not a thing which has been originated by Muslims. This was given in the Vedas, that the men and women should always be segregated and should be kept separate. But we see nowadays women will just try to reject that, that, oh, we are all equal, why can't I also stand down and shake hands? Why can't I be among the men giving a farewell? Why I should be separate? Why I should be given separate treatment? Why is this discrimination being done against me? So Prabhupada said that this women's liberation movement, all this, you know, in India we have all these Mahila Samaj and all these things, that was actually not started by men. Sorry, that was actually not started by women. It was started by men, Prabhupada says, this women's liberation movement. It was not a group of women who felt they were exploited and therefore they have to fight for their equal rights and therefore they started this whole women's liberation. No, it was started by men. The men started it because, you know, in the Vedic times there was so much segregation, all this was being so strictly followed. So men who were not having very good motives, who were unscrupulous in their behavior and who wanted to exploit women, they actually started this. So this, you know, all this education started that how women, you know, are also equal to men, they can also move shoulder to shoulder with men. So then when the women are available within their vicinity, then it's very easy to exploit them. And there was once a letter written by a woman to the Back to Godhead a few years ago. And this lady had written that, I have been following your Back to Godhead magazine and I have been following all the books of Prabhupada. So I am very convinced now that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. I am very convinced about the Vaishnava philosophy that I should follow all these things. But somehow, you know, what Prabhupada writes in his books and what is being given in the Shastras, that women are subordinate to men and they should be kept separate from men, I am not able to absorb this. So why this discrimination is there against women in your society? This is a letter she wrote to the Back to Godhead. And then Jai Advait Maharaj had given a very beautiful response to this lady. He had said that, you know, actually this discrimination which is there between men and women, and even Prabhupada said this, once a female reporter came to Srila Prabhupada and she asked Prabhupada that, why do you always call women as less intelligent? We have read in your Bhagavad Gita, we have read in many of your books that you say that women are less intelligent. Is it true? And Prabhupada was very bold. It was not that, and that way this lady brought a whole crew of women photographers. You know, she was also a woman interviewer, then there was a photographer who was a woman, so everybody, a full woman crew she brought from her newspaper. So she thought, oh, Prabhupada might feel overwhelmed that, you know, see how many ladies are in the forefront nowadays, they are working in offices, like she thought Prabhupada might feel like that. But Prabhupada very coolly said, yes, women are less intelligent. And then this lady reporter asked, she said that, why are you discriminating like this against women? And Prabhupada said, I am not discriminating, nature has discriminated. Who am I to discriminate? So on the physical platform or on the material platform, it is nature who has discriminated. Women and men have different physiques. They have different mentalities. They have different consciousness. They are all different. If you, for example, women's body is generally weaker than a men's. So they are not able to do all the work which a man can do. So Prabhupada said, and even if a child has to be born, it is a woman who bears the child. So Prabhupada kept asking, the female reporter that, do you think when you, you know, you become pregnant, you will bear half the child and the man will bear half the child? If you are talking so much about women's liberation and women's equality, then why don't you do that? He said, but no, nature has said that women have to bear children. So only the woman becomes pregnant, the man doesn't become pregnant. So this is how nature has discriminated. So I am not discriminating, I am just following what the Shastras are saying, Prabhupada told him. And on similar lines, Jai Advait Maharaj also wrote to this lady who had written this question to back to Godhead. He said that on the material platform, these differences are there between a man and a woman. They have different proclivities, they have different natures. But on the spiritual platform, everybody is the same. And he quoted the shloka from Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshina. He said, why just a man and woman, even a dog eater, everybody is the same. Because ultimately we are all spirit souls. It is just that in this lifetime, some spirit soul is encased in a man's body, some spirit soul is encased in a woman's body. So that's all. That's only for this lifetime. In the next lifetime, again you may be a man. Who knows? So it is not on the spiritual platform. On the spiritual platform, everybody is equal. It's not that a man's the soul of a man is more superior to the soul of a woman. No. No. On the spiritual level, everybody is equal because they are all spirit souls. They are all part and parcel of Krishna. Everybody is a child of Krishna. Even a dog, even a bear, even a worm, everybody is a child of Krishna. So there is no difference on the spiritual platform, Jai Advait Maharaj wrote. But he said that on the material platform there is a difference and we have to acknowledge it. And because women are not acknowledging it nowadays, that is why we see all this chaos in the society. And Prabhupada also gave one more very nice example. He said that, for example, you know, in the Western countries especially, people love their dogs so much. Like, you know, there are big pet shops, there is so much money they spend on their dogs. If it's winter, there is, you know, tomorrow we have the fancy dress competition for children in the temple. And one of the mothers was looking for a dog dress for her child, a puppy dress, because the child is acting in Nimaya and the puppy, so she's a puppy. And she was calling up all the stores, Kmart, Big W, Target, she was calling up to find out a puppy dress for her child. And everybody was asking, oh, you want a dress for a dog? Because they are also tuned to that okay, you know, we see so many times they have such nice sweaters for the dogs and little padding for their feet and all that. So they dress up their dogs so much, they spend so much money on their dogs. So Prabhupada says that, you know, although they love dogs, but tomorrow let's say a very learned scholar comes and he has brought his dog and there is, you know, like he's going to give a class or something like that and then there's an assembly. So where will he keep his dog? He will keep his dog outside and come. And if you tell this learned scholar, go, you also go and sit with your dog and you give a lecture from there, the learned scholar will actually get offended that, oh, you are giving me the position of a dog, how can I sit with a dog? So although we see that, you know, on spiritual level everybody is the same, but materially these differences are there. You cannot, you know, make a scholar sit with his dog and give a lecture outside near the door. So the dog is kept near the door and the scholar is given a seat in the lecture room. So Prabhupada says that these differences are there in different bodies and we have to acknowledge these differences. We cannot just ignore them. And women especially cannot just ignore them saying that, oh, we are modern women, we believe in women's liberation, we believe in women's equality. So we are not going to follow all these injunctions which have been given in the Shastras. Prabhupada says no, they have to be followed. So we see that all these material differences are there and Prabhupada never used to discriminate on the spiritual platform. And therefore we see in our society, Srila Prabhupada was so radical or he was so bold that he was the one who started Brahmacharini Ashram in ISKCON. There are no Brahmacharini Ashrams existing anywhere. So Srila Prabhupada never discriminated against women on the spiritual platform. In fact, he used to encourage all his female disciples to give lectures, to sing. Like we know in the earlier days, Yamuna Devi sang the Govinda Madhi Purusham prayers. They made an album with George Harrison. So he used to encourage his female disciples to be in the forefront. He used to encourage them to do all these activities. It was not that he used to discriminate and keep them suppressed. Oh, y'all can't do all these activities. Only the men are meant to do these activities. Prabhupada never discriminated against the women. In fact, in the society, he made all the women's position very respectable by giving them all these positions in preaching, in terms of, you know, temple worship. He allowed women to go on the altar and become women pujaris. So Prabhupada did all these radical things so that, you know, women, because he recognized that there is no difference on the spiritual level, then why can't women be brahmacharinis? Why can't women go on the altar and worship the deities? So Prabhupada gave that empowerment to women in the society. But because he was following the Shastras, he used to write like that women are less intelligent, but that was all based on the material platform. In fact, once one female disciple, she went and asked Srila Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, that these men are saying that you have written in your books that women are less intelligent. So why, Prabhupada, why this discrimination is there? I'm not able to digest it, that the men are saying women are less intelligent and women are subordinate, their position is subordinate in society to men. So I'm not able to somehow take it, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada told her, he said that yes, it is true that women are less intelligent and women are subordinate to men. But she, he said that, I know that pinches you when you read in my book. But he said it is pinching you because you are identifying yourself with a woman body. So he said, although it is pinching, the fact is pinching, that it's given in the Shastras, that in a woman's body, when a soul is present in a woman's body, then you know they are meant for some different kinds of activities in society. They are not meant for the same activities which men do on a material platform. Their intelligence is less. They are meant to be subordinate. But more pinching is the fact if you identify yourself with this body. If you identify yourself saying that, oh, I'm a woman, and that is why you start, you know, feeling so much remorse that all these things have been given in the Shastras. And it is similar to another episode which happened when Prabhupada was present, when Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj was there. So he went and spoke to Prabhupada. He had just joined one of the temples in US. And because Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is an African American, he felt that some of the devotees in that temple were sort of, you know, discriminating against him, and they were giving him a different treatment. And he felt they were doing that because he was an African American. That's what Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj felt. So he went and went out his grievance in front of Srila Prabhupada. And he said that I feel that they are doing, there is racial discrimination over here. That these devotees are looking down on me and somewhat treating me differently because I'm an African American. And Prabhupada said that yes, they might be doing that. I'm not denying or I'm not defending or I'm not trying to protect if some of my disciples or some of the devotees in the temple have done that. But he said that if you are, you know, take it to your heart, that means you are also identifying with your body. If you don't take it to your heart, then you are not identifying with your body. So that is where I want you to rise. Prabhupada was trying to make him rise from that platform of material platform of having a different colored body. Prabhupada wanted Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj to see that ultimately he is a spirit soul, but only in this lifetime he has been given this body. So Prabhupada said, if you identify with this body, you will, you know, feel insulted by their remarks, or you will feel affected by their remarks, or you will feel hurt. But if you don't identify, then there will be no difference between you and them. They are identifying right now, I understand. But if you don't identify, then at least you will not be on this material platform. You will be transcending to the spiritual platform. So the Shastras say that the woman's position, like we see over here, the women have gone on the rooftop. So they are separate. They have been separated. They are not intermingling with the men freely when Krishna is leaving for Dwarka. So Shastras always say that women are meant to be like that. They are meant to be very chaste. We are seeing how much chastity of women is being preserved in the from these examples in the Bhagavatam we see. So Prabhupada says women are meant to be chaste. They are meant to be faithful and they are meant to be loving to their husbands. And they are meant to serve their husbands nicely. So Prabhupada has said a lot of time in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavata, many purports, that men should be servant of the servant of the servant of their Guru Maharaj. And women should serve their husband. That is their duty. And I was, we were just studying the sixth canto, and in that we were studying about Narad Muni and Daksha. So Daksha had 10,000 sons whom Narad Muni went and preached to, and he sent them for the renounced order of life. After that, Daksha had another 10,000 sons or something. So first he had 1,000 sons and then 10,000 sons or something like that. But somehow Narad Muni preached to all of them that Daksha had sent them to perform austerity so that they become good. Like Daksha understood that, you know, Vedic injunction that you have to have good brahmacharya life and training and do austerities to become good grahastas. So he wanted his sons, all of them, to become good grahastas so that they would expand the population. Because Daksha himself is a prajapati, and that is his service in the society, to expand the population and populate the whole universe. So he sent these sons to do austerities, and then he wanted them to come back, become grahastas and populate. But in the meantime, Narad Muni, who is the expert preacher, he reached there and he preached to these sons, all the two sets of sons, and he sent them off for the renounced order of life. And Daksha, it is mentioned that Daksha was so upset that Narad Muni did that to his sons. He in fact, you know, said so many harsh words against Narad Muni
that you are actually a cheater in the dress of a mendicant. He said so many harsh words to Narad Muni. And after that, Daksha did not want to take a chance. So he, instead of having sons, he just produced 60 daughters. And in that purport, Prabhupada says that he had 60 daughters because Daksha knew that females are not meant for the renounced order of life. So he knew that this time there is no risk that Narad Muni will come and preach to them and he will send them also away. He knew that the females, and in that purport Prabhupada writes that the position of ladies is they get married nicely and they serve their husbands. They remain faithful and chaste to their husbands. And they serve their husbands nicely, and if the husband is a nice servant of his Guru Maharaj, then the ladies will automatically get 50% of whatever austerities or whatever spiritual activities the husband is doing without putting any extra efforts. If they are just chaste to their husband, if they are serving their husband nicely in his material as well as spiritual activities, they will get 50% of all that result. And Prabhupada explains that in that purport. So Prabhupada says that the women are meant to be like that. Be very chaste, be very faithful to your husband. And when a woman is like this, subservient and serving the husband nicely, then the husband also feels very satisfied and happy. And the husband takes charge of such a woman. And he feels that it is his duty to protect such a woman. So this is all dependent on the woman. But if they do the reverse, they don't want to be chaste or they don't want to be subservient to their husband, and they fight for equal rights, that no, why are you thinking that I should only look after the house? It is your duty also. And we see that in modern days, everybody, even the, you know, when many times if you go and knock on someone's door, the woman, a lady will come out in jeans and t-shirt or whatever and with a mug of coffee in her hand, and she will say, what do you want? And you say, oh, I wanted to speak to the man, I wanted to speak to the husband. And she will say, oh, he's washing clothes inside. Many times we see, you know, these situations are there. Many ladies feel that why should I alone look after the house? It is his duty also. I'm also going to office, I'm also working. So why should I alone do all the household work? Let the men also do household work. But Prabhupada was not for all these, equality on these terms. Prabhupada never wanted these things. Prabhupada wanted that women stay at home and women serve their husbands, serve the home and serve their children nicely. That was the duty of women, Prabhupada said. And nowadays we see there is this modern term called homemakers for ladies who stay at home and who are not working. Because in the house also there are so many activities which ladies can do. So Prabhupada was never for that situation that women go for jobs and women also bring money to the house. Because Prabhupada knew that once this situation is there, then there will be exploitation at the workplace first of all. And also in the house there will be no peace. Because then the woman will start, her ego will go up. That, oh, I am also equal, I am also earning money and coming, then why should I just look after this house? Why should I just look after the children? Why should I just do all these things? Why can't the man do it? So we see in workplace also, because ladies have started working, there are so many affairs in India also, I've heard, not only just in Western countries, in India also it goes on. There are so many affairs between married women and married men. Because the ladies are going and exposing themselves and working in these workplaces. So Prabhupada was never for all these things. Prabhupada always wanted the Shastric injunction that women be kept separate from the men, and women actually are meant just to be faithful to their husband and serve their husband. And this will win the man over. Not, you know, the woman's equality that I'm equal to you, that is not going to win a man's heart over. And it is very similar. I read in one of the purports, Prabhupada said it is very similar to a soul serving Krishna. He said that when a person is doing devotional service very nicely, he is trying to become a pure devotee and he is serving Krishna very faithfully, he is very chaste, he has one-pointed devotion for Krishna, then such devotees are able to buy the love of Krishna and they bind Krishna with their love. So Krishna gets bought by such devotees, and then Krishna feels that now it is my duty to give protection to these devotees who are totally surrendered to me. So then Krishna takes it on himself to look after the maintenance, look after the protection of his surrendered devotees. So Prabhupada says it is the same situation between a husband and wife. If the wife is faithful, chaste and surrendered to the husband's will, then the husband will automatically get that feeling that no, it is my duty to look after my wife. I have to protect her. I am her maintainer. So that is the situation, and that will keep the Grihastashram very peaceful if this injunction, this Pashtrit injunction is followed. In this regard, there is a very nice conversation which happens between Satyabhama and Draupadi. So Krishna once took Satyabhama with him when he went to visit the Pandavas. And while the Pandavas and Krishna were discussing all political affairs, Satyabhama went to speak to Draupadi. And Satyabhama was always intrigued that how Draupadi is able to keep her five husbands happy. Because we know it's very difficult to keep even one husband happy. So how was Draupadi managing this? She wanted to get some tips from Draupadi. So Satyabhama went to Draupadi and she asked her that how is it, you know, guhyam akshati prachati. That this is what is meant, that you inquire about confidential topics and when you learn them, you implement them in your life. So this is what Satyabhama was doing with Draupadi. So she asked her that how is it that you are able to keep all your five husbands happy? And Draupadi shared, she said that this is what I do. I am not talking about what generally ladies should do or Grahastha Mataji should do, but this is what I do in my life. So Draupadi said that I am very chaste and faithful and loving to my husband. That is the first principle. Draupadi gave a list of almost 10 or 15 things that she was doing to keep her husband happy. But she said that I am very chaste and faithful to my husband. And I consider my husband as the Lord. So this is the mood in which I always serve my husbands. I think they are God and I worship them in that mood. So I'm very chaste and pure and I also worship them in that mood that he is the Lord. So I always serve my husbands in that mood. And I never give a chance to my husband. Based on my chastity and purity, I never give a chance to my husband to doubt me even for a moment. Or to doubt my chastity even for a moment. So I conduct myself in such a way that my husband never gets any doubt about my chastity. Or he never gets any doubt that there might be something else or some other motive in her mind. And I always serve my husband and always I am the last to sleep and the first one to wake up in the house. And in this regard there is a very nice pastime in the Mahabharata. So when the Rajasuya Yajna was done by Yudhishthir Maharaj, at that time there were so many millions of people who had come to attend the Rajasuya Yajna and they had erected big halls for people to take prasadam. So as soon as each hall had a capacity of 50,000 people and as soon as one hall would fill to 50,000 people, they would blow the conch shell that now no more people can accommodate in this hall. Then the people would go to the next hall. And like that there were so many halls with so many 50,000 people of batches of 50,000 people taking prasadam. And Draupadi was in charge of all these things. She was overseeing this completely. All the prasadam arrangements, staying arrangements, accommodation for the guests, all this department was Draupadi's. So she was ensuring that all the people are getting prasadam, that you know every hall is filled to 50,000, they are being served nicely, the second hall is filled to 50,000. And after all the guests had eaten in each of these halls, only after that Draupadi took her prasad. So this is how Draupadi used to serve the mission of her husbands. So it is mentioned also that ladies are like Grahalakshmis. So they have to wake up early, they should be ready before their husbands get up and they should be ready to serve them. And this is what Draupadi was also doing. She was the last to sleep and the first one to get up and always smiling and being ready to start the services for her husband. And she also told Satyabhama that I never said any bad things about my mother-in-law. So we see nowadays, you know, that is one big complaint which is there in families, in married families, that the late daughter-in-law is always cribbing about the mother-in-law, especially to the husband. That your mother did like this to me, your mother did like that to me, and you know, it, the husband is really like a sandwich between the wife and the mother-in-law, but in his own mother. So it's very difficult for the husband's position becomes very difficult. But Draupadi is telling Satyabhama that I never say one ill thing about my mother-in-law, Kunti Maharani. I never say like anything because that will hurt my husband's heart. So she never used to do that. And she also said that when my husband is there at home, my husbands are there at home, I decorate very nicely. I dress up nicely so that it's very pleasing to my husband. But when my husbands are away, then I totally live a very simple life. I don't dress up opulently. I live almost like an ascetic. And that is the time I devote more time to the Lord, to Lord Krishna, so that I can increase my spiritual activities or my devotional activities. But as soon as he is back, I know my first duty is to serve my husband. So again, I get busy in my services. So these are the instructions which Draupadi gave to Satyabhama on what is the position of women and how they should serve their husbands based on the Shastra. And we see this living example in the Bhagavatam, even in the example of Devahuti serving Kardama Muni. Now Devahuti was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, who is the emperor of the whole world. And she was brought up in such opulence. She was the princess, so she was brought up in such opulence. But she was married to Kardama Muni, who was an ascetic in the forest. So he was a very, you know, a very powerful Brahman or a very powerful sage, but he was living like an ascetic in the forest. And Devahuti immediately adjusted to her new lifestyle.
It's not that, you know, the moment she married and she came, she started cribbing. Oh, in my father's house I had this facility, that facility, you are making me live in the forest, I have to live in a simple hut. No, those are not her complaints. Immediately she also adopted the lifestyle of her husband. She also wore three baths, she also gave up all those opulent clothes and jewelry, whatever her father had given, and she started serving her husband in his activities. So her husband was so much engaged in doing meditation, yajñas, and she also started doing all that. And it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that Devahuti became so emaciated after some time, and she was covered with dust, her hair became matted. So this is the way she conducted herself. Not that she kept her position as a princess, oh, you do your austerities, it's okay, but I'm a princess, so I'm going to dress up like that. No, she immediately adopted and she started serving her husband as the way in which the situation was of her grahastha ashram. So there is this shining example of Devahuti, how nicely she served her husband also. So this was all given in the Shastras, how women should serve their husbands, and that is their first duty, and how they should always remain faithful and chaste to their husbands. So there was one Western journalist who had read about, you know, little bit knowledge she had about what was said in the Vedic times or in the Vedic books about what is the position of women. And she took a trip to India because she wanted to write a book saying that how in Vedic times women were suppressed. And they had been kept very suppressed, and their desires had never been fulfilled, and they were never allowed to do what they wanted to do. She wanted to prove that in her book. So she took a tour of India. Now when she first came to the cities, and she went to the big cities like Bombay, Calcutta, Delhi and all these cities. And she felt that, oh, there is no difference between the ladies here and the ladies in the West. They are also all dressing up now, you know, as Westerners do, wearing pants, shirts, skirts, this, that. They are also all going to office. They are also earning money. There is no difference. So she said that, you know, here there is no Vedic culture present. How do I say that they are suppressed? They don't look to be suppressed on the material platform. So then she decided, okay, let me go to the villages and check. Because now also much of the population of India lives in villages. So she then took a tour of the villages. And she came to a simple farmer's wife. And that farmer's wife was sitting in her home with, you know, a nice sari, head covered, and she was grinding grain on that grinding stone. And the children were playing, and the farmer's wife was looking after the children, parallelly cooking, and she was nicely engaged in all these household activities. So then this journalist thought, oh, now is my opportunity. Now I can see that this lady is not working, so let me go and ask her how she has been suppressed by her husband. So she started having a conversation with this farmer's wife, and she said that, don't you feel you're suppressed? Don't you feel your talent has not been able to come out? Because see what you are doing, just sitting at home and grinding this grain on this grinding mortar and just looking after the husband, looking after the family, cooking. That's it. Your life has been reduced to. And then that lady said, what is your husband doing? Why is he suppressing you like this? And the farmer's wife started laughing. She said, suppressing? I'm so happy. I'm not at all feeling I'm suppressed. I'm not at all feeling that I have missed out anything. And then she said that my husband goes to the farm. He produces enough grain that we have enough in the house. He earns enough money so that we have all our necessities taken care of. My children are also nicely taken care of. He's taking care of me. Then what is the complaint I have? I'm so happy in doing this. I'm very happy in serving my house, and I'm very happy in serving my husband. And I'm very happy in bringing up my children peacefully. And then this journalist asked her, don't you want to go out and work? Why should you be the only one looking after the house? Why don't you also work like your husband? And she said, what is the need? He is looking after all that outside activities of earning money, producing grains and coming. Then I'm peacefully looking after the house, and it's working so well for us. So I'm absolutely happy in my position like this, and I don't have any complaints. Neither do I feel I have been suppressed or my talents have been hidden. And like this, this journalist interviewed a few ladies in the village, and it was a big revelation to her. She realized that, you know, what I was trying to prove was actually completely wrong. In fact, modern culture is actually, you know, doing that, exploiting women, making them work, making them do things which they were not supposed or not meant to do. The modern society is exploiting women, but you know, a person or society where Vedic system is being followed, there the women are much happier. She found that these village, simple village women were much happier than the women in the cities. So she immediately changed her view, and she actually wrote a book later on that how, you know, Vedic, whatever the Shastra says is true, and that, you know, it was not that women were suppressed. That was the correct position for a woman. So her book ended up being like that. You know, actually promoting Vedic culture and actually supporting whatever has been given in the Vedic culture. So that should be the mood, that, you know, the wife serves the husband nicely, and the husband is a very nice servant of the Guru. And when the husband is nice servant of the Guru, he will never think, or he will never exploit his wife. He will never think that my wife is subservient to me and she is always meant to serve me and I am the male or I am the head of the family. In fact, it is said that, you know, if the male is the head of the family, but the woman is like the neck. So the head turns wherever the neck turns. It's actually the neck which is controlling the head. So similarly, a chaste and faithful wife, she will control the head or the male with her chastity, with her purity, with her love. She will actually control. Similarly, how a surrendered devotee controls the Lord. Like, we know how the gopis used to make Lord Krishna dance, or Yashoda used to bind Krishna when he was stealing butter. So they were all controlling him by their love. And same way, a chaste and faithful wife will be able to control their husbands by their love. So whatever is said in the Shastras about the position of women in society is not wrong, or is not to be rejected, or is not to be given up, saying that, you know, Shastras or Vedas are discriminating against women, this is not what should be followed, we have to keep up with modern times, in modern times, you know, women can do whatever they want. No, if we somehow try and follow these Vedic injunctions in our life, then definitely we will make progress in our spiritual life. Because the Shastra's purpose is that making us follow all these things so that we progress in our spiritual life. And we see that the Bhagavatam or the other Vedic literatures don't look down upon the position of women. We see here, in fact, two chapters ago, there was a full chapter dedicated to Kunti Maharani's prayers. So if the, you know, Vedic injunction was that women should always be subservient and they are not very intelligent, then if that was considered like that, then their prayers would not have been given in the Bhagavatam to stay there forever, for all of eternity. And even the simple prayers, it's said that the prayers which these simple women were offering were more pleasing to the Lord than the Vedic hymns which, you know, Brahmanas would offer, or which the Vedas offer, which indirectly glorify the supreme position of the Lord. No, these prayers by these simple ladies who were singing from the rooftop, those were much more pleasing to the Lord. So the Shastras are always glorifying the position of women. It is not that they are, you know, looking down upon women. So here also it's being glorified, and further down in the 10th canto, the Brahmana's wives, the whole pastime of the Brahmana's wives giving up their, leaving their husbands behind and serving Krishna. So there also their prayers are being glorified. So every canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has glorification of women. It is not looking down upon the position of women. So simply by following the Shastras and simply by understanding this position which the Shastras explain about the women, if we also follow this, then we will make progress. And the Shastras are never to be rejected, or these injunctions are never to be rejected, thinking them not to be keeping up with times. So whichever time the Vedas are aparushya, they have been spoken by the Lord. So in whichever time, whichever yuga, whichever circumstance, they are always applicable in all circumstances. So we'll end our class here, and we'll ask if there are any comments or corrections or questions. संसार श्रीमद् भागवतम की शिला प्रभुपाद की।